Welcome to Between Ourselves, the podcast that centres Black women's voices in Europe. My name is Sakai Makoni and I'm the presenter and fellow participant in these conversations. So join us as we dive into today's discussion. Welcome to part two. If you haven't listened to part one, I would recommend going back and listening to that first. I am speaking with Tumu and Jomoke on the topic of Black women and disabilities, and they're sharing their experiences and perspectives. Let me caveat again, you will hear my mouse clicking throughout. The mic was super sensitive. Let it be a nice little backdrop to your listening. In this part, the conversation moves to Black womanhood and disability. We think about disabilities and sexuality, their experiences being disabled and visiting African countries, the dynamics of having surgery, and we talk about COVID and disability. So let's resume the discussion. Race and gender affect if or how your disability is perceived? So, like, I suppose the archetypal disabled person is a white male, and being a Black woman with a disability, like, how do you think your disability is or isn't seen, I suppose, or perceived?
Do you want to go?
I knew you were going to do that. I was trying to make you hold that out. No, I will say it's something that I've long thought about and is the motivation behind co-founding Triple Cripples, the fact that having been disabled for practically all of my life, and I consume a lot of media, especially when I was growing up, I watched TV a lot. And first of all, like, you never really saw disability. And on the very, very, very rare occasions that you did, disability never looked like me. And growing up and, like, learning more, finding out about the ways in which, like, they intersect and, like, these identities intersect and compound one another, essentially, because being a Black woman, and it depends on your presentation of Black womanhood as well, like, are you fat, are you dark skinned, are you, like, considered attractive by white supremacist beauty standards and desirability politics and stuff like that. It's just kind of like you are deemed to be less delicate because you are a Black woman, but now you're a Black woman on crutches, now you're a Black woman in a wheelchair, and there's the obvious infantilization of disabled people, where we are seen as not necessarily precious in the in a positive sense, but delicate, fragile, breakable, just kind of like not essentially created properly, or like you were created in a way that there's still something missing, like it hasn't been fully done, fully made. And it's difficult and weird because you are all three all the time. You are Black, I am Black all the time, I'm a woman all the time, and I'm disabled all the time. You hear that, DWP? I am disabled all of the time. But it's just, depending on the situation, depending on which environment you're in, it will be because of one of these identities that you're getting screwed over. So in certain spaces, environments, like, my Blackness won't be what I'm discriminated or oppressed against because of that particular thing, but it does add to it, but it's not the main component. And it's difficult living, you know, these complexities all at once. But I think there's often, it's wrong to see these complexities as something inherently bad, but like from there springs forth a richness as well. Like, there's so many communities that I'm part of, and there's so many kind of experiences that I can relate to. There are certain very specifically Black British things that I'll get, but then when somebody mentions, it's like, oh yeah, the ableism that I experienced, or like there wasn't a lift, and like I can understand that as well. So you're coming from a place of great depth, and I think like the experiences, knowledge, and just gifts and resources that people like myself and Timo can provide. I think they need to be regarded more often and more highly as well. Like, we're not coming from a place of lack at all. We're actually coming forth from a great place of richness. Yeah.
Agreed.
Follow that.
Why did I let you go first? Why did I let you go first? No, I'm just going to be like, yeah, say some comment. But basically, no, I agree. And I think, you know, like, I don't know, I wouldn't want to be anything else, really.
Agreed.
You know, and that's taken a long time to get there. And I think that, like, to truly actually be there and not just it be a front. And I think that I feel like there's a lot of contradictions. So, like what Jamoke mentioned about infantilizing us, that gets me so angry. It's like we are with these kind of fragile, vulnerable, childlike people, adults, and so we're desexualized, we can't think for ourselves, we can't make our own decisions, we need to be told what's best for us, what's in our best interest. And then on the other hand, you've got this idea that, like, anyone can have access to us at any time, so people will come and touch you inappropriately, or come into your personal space, or feel like they can ask you very private questions. And so it's like a very weird contradiction a lot of the time. And I think that is specific to our gender and, like, and being disabled, you know, and our race as well, like, all of it together. You can't disentangle it, that's the thing.
Exactly.
So, like you said, sometimes I'm like, this person's being a dickhead, but are they a racist dickhead, or are they just, is this the wheelchair, or what is it that they're fixated on? What is it that's important there? And actually, it's everything. Like, we can't, it's too hard to, you can't disentangle it, but also I think there are specific things, like, for example, there's all this stuff at the moment, like, just one example is, like, within this COVID-19, life that we're living, like, disabled women have really struggled, and, like, Sisters of Freedom put out a report about this recently, about all the different ways that disabled women specifically have been affected by the pandemic, and, like, the way society doesn't see us as, like, fulfilling multiple roles, like, sitting, like, having different positions, like, we're not just disabled women, like, we're also all the other things, like, we are friends and mums and carers, and we have jobs or we don't have jobs, or we volunteer, or we're doing a lot of different things at all times, and that's often not kind of respected. Even thinking, what came to mind earlier was, like, even to get a smear test, I know this is quite random, but I've just been thinking about it this morning. To get a smear test, you need to be able to move onto the bed, right? If someone can't move onto the bed by themselves, how are they? They can't have a smear test. Like, that's just absurd, like, that we live, like, where we're living now, and that there are so many women that cannot access something that's so, like, kind of pushed and promoted. And it's offensive that, like, oftentimes you'll get a, you know, like, public health will kind of push something. Go and get your smear test. It's not that bad. And they'll put out a video, or this is what it's like to have a smear test. But that's not speaking to the experience of thousands of disabled women who physically cannot access that provision. So I think, we face quite specific challenges that are often not spoken about outside of the disabled community.
And I remember in past conversations, you said something to me that I'd never thought about. You were like, I don't think people, although you changed your mind on this, people use the strong black woman stereotype on me. Do you remember this? Because you were saying, like, I suppose being in a wheelchair, there's this kind of infantilization. And so, like, you're not maybe seen as the scary black woman. But then something happened that made you... So I just wonder if, like, different stereotypes are placed against you or operate in a different way because of your particular experiences?
I think that it's hard to say, isn't it? Because it just depends on the context. But the situations that I've been in, I feel, like my experiences have been like very much around like being infantilized, being kind of undermined, or those kinds of things. I would say less like, not particularly seen as like a threat, for example, in the way that some women, some black women are. I don't know. It varies depending on where I'm at, I think. What about you, Jamoke?
I agree with you, and this is something that myself and myself and Kim, the other half of Triple Cripples, have discussed, is about the presentation of black womanhood. And, you know, whether you are fat, whether you are dark skinned, whether you're tall, like, your physicality could, like, reinforce these absolutely disgusting and awful stereotypes that have been part of a huge propaganda campaign for so long, by white supremacy. Sorry, is this thing frozen? I don't know.
Yeah, it cut out
a
little bit. All right.
Yeah, you're fine.
Oh, okay. So depending on your presentation of black womanhood, and being that we are both visibly disabled with the signifiers of mobility aids, that tells people's like, oh, this person's a little bit more vulnerable, like they're not as strong, they're a little bit weaker, they're less of a threat. And it's quite weird because the like, black people generally are seen to be like, oh, these barbarians, quite highly violent, and especially black women, like highly sexualized as well. But then disabled people are seen as to be lacking in any sort of threat. It's just like there's an infantilization there. You're just seen as quite weak and pathetic. And then all of these like lived experiences and complexities of people's lives are like quite literally flattened to fit whatever stereotype that person has in mind. So it's like, I don't see you as a sexual being, but then you're a black woman, so you're clearly just nuts about sex all the time, or like you're clearly very weak, but then maybe like, and it's sometimes subconscious, sometimes very conscious, but it's just like, it doesn't give room for those that have specific experiences like us to like live our actual fully realized brightly colored lives, you know. And sometimes like with all of this nonsense that, you know, comes about, and it's especially prevalent within the world of dating, like you'll get a lot of nonsense in the world of dating, you know. They will just like, oh my god, what happened to you? It's like, oh, can you have sex, can you do this, can you do that? And it's just kind of like, you haven't even said hello to me. But it's just like, at the end of the day, like, you're just trying to pop your pussy for a real one. That's what you're trying to do. That's all you're trying to do. A more level is just trying to pop your pussy for a real one. And yeah,
I feel like
I'm telling you, like, why are you trying to make it so difficult?
Why all the questions? No, I find it like,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean, babe. I know what you mean. But like, I find it's so like weird to me, because like the black disabled women that I know are like so opposite to those stereotypes. Like, I'm just like, wow, you really underestimate people. And you don't know, like, it's just, it's absolutely polar opposite to people that I know and love. And yeah, so it's wild out here.
On that point, I was thinking about like some of the stereotypes about black women with disabilities that might have been used against you, because often there's this like imagined notion of like, if you're black, if you're in a wheelchair, if you're a woman, imagine if you were queer too. Like, these types of I don't know, stereotypes or offhand comments or offensive remarks that people say to you, like, does that happen to you a lot? And like, what have been like the wildest things you've heard?
Go ahead, Tamal.
I think, for example, I think a lot of them are played out, but like quite not subtly, but like it's only when you've got the lived experience you know what's going on. So, like, I've had some wild experiences. Well, I think we've both had wild experiences, right? Where people have just been off the chain. Like, what are you talking about, Karen? Like, literally, it's been wild. But like, so I think there's like little things that happen like very regularly. So for example, the amount of times I've been in a healthcare setting and they'll be like, oh, are you on any medication? And I'll be like, oh, well, I'm on the contraceptive pill, for example. And they'll be like, oh, right, is that for your periods? Yeah, is that for your periods? I'm like, no, it's so I do not get impregnated. What do you, like, what, like, why are you coming to me about periods? I've never even said that I've got bad periods. Like, they just make an assumption there, like, you're not a sexual person, so obviously, why on earth would you be on the pill? You must be on the pill because you'll get bad periods. Like, those sorts of, like, assumptions. Or just, like, people saying, like, things like, oh, I don't know, one of my neighbours came around once to complain about some foxes or something. And she was, I hope she doesn't listen to this, but anyway, she was like... She's like, oh no, I need you to report it because I work. And I was just like, you don't know me, like, you know. And it's that something like, we don't have a job, we sit at home all day waiting for somebody to like pop in and like, you know, tell us what to do with our day, and just like this idea that we live really one-dimensional lives. I think that pops up a lot. So yeah, there's a lot of assumptions that are made based on these stereotypes, but I don't think there's one specific stereotype that applies to all. I think they vary.
Yeah, like, I mean, people go through like a tick box of sort of like stereotypes that they can employ, and then they see me and Tamu and they're like, oh, there's so many boxes. Like, okay, so what do we think we know about disability? What do we think we know about blackness? What do we think we know about women? It's like, yeah, you can like mix and match. And it's just like, it's very wild. And the point that you'd made actually about being in these sexual health centers and whatever, like there's, even though it's literally about sexual health, like this is your whole job. It's like, at no point did I give you any sort of indication that it was because of like my menstruation or whatever. But there's a presumption that you can't possibly be having sex. You cannot. But first of all, like there's, and this is kind of like from different angles as well. First of all, you don't look like you can. So in terms of the physicality, but then also who would want to sleep with you as well? And there's these presumptions, and it leads to some very dark statistics for disabled black women, because like in terms of if we speak about black women generally like being victims of like sexual assault or rape or any of those awfully disgusting things, we are the least likely to be believed. And this actually goes up even higher if the perpetrator is a white man. Because a white man, why would he stoop so low as to try? Do you know what I mean? Like these, it's because of the ongoing, and it is still ongoing, don't let them lie to you, you know, like campaign of white supremacy. It's like, no, nobody would want you. You're just there to fill a very specific desire. But there's no way that there's a human being behind this fetishized being, you know, and being disabled as well. I think they're called devotees. So people, mate, it's real out here. People that are quite literally devoted to a disabled person. I don't know. We go on podcasts talking about disability. I'm gonna find you. And like they're devoted to the person, not necessarily because of who they are, their characteristics, but because of their disability, because of their use of mobility aids, or some of them it's because they're like missing a limb. Like that's one as well. Like if they're missing a limb, they're missing an arm, leg, whatever. It's like that's specifically what I'm attracted to. And it's just a different kind of fetish. But at the end of the day, what it does is reduce the person at the end of these these fetishes to body parts, essentially, you know. And I'm like, look, man, if you're trying to be devoted to me, I'll give you my account number. Here's my sort code. Like, worship me like that.
Instead, they're sliding in the DMs like, oh, hi.
I know, doing nonsense. And I'm like, what's your bank account saying? Because you're having a lot of opinions for, like,
But do you know what? I was just going to say, like, it's, I often find, like, when, so, like, those experiences that I had in relation to, for example, like, contraceptive pill or whatever, stuff like that, they've often not been in sexual health terms. They've often been in, like, a general checkup, like, or an unrelated checkup. And I think it's sometimes when you're caught off guard, because it's like,
yeah, you don't see it coming.
Yeah, it's like, if I'm rolling into the sexual health clinic, I'm there with my, like, battle face on. I know that you're like, that I might experience discrimination, and I'm ready for you, right? And anything you say, I'm just gonna shame you, like, in
embarrassment. Shaming works.
You know, that, like, straight face of, like, just, yeah, shame. But in other settings, when my guard's down and then people come with these assumptions, I find that more difficult because I'm not ready for it. And I'm like, oh, you lot are all the same. Wow, okay.
Yeah, being caught off guard leads you to get flustered as well. And sometimes you don't even clock it when it's happening. It's like, after the moment's passed, you're like, rah, that was fucked up, you know?
Yeah.
But then it's too late. Like, you can't cuss their clout anymore. Be like, I'd like to book another appointment with my GP to cuss them out, please.
I know. But then that's the thing. Then you're left with it.
You have to sit with it.
Yeah. And I hate that. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm actually raging now. And the person's gone, and the situation's passed, and I've realized.
And they haven't thought a moment about it.
Yeah.
It's left with you.
Went along with their merry day, and I'm just here, like, I'm left angry and upset. Yeah. So,
It's fucked up, mate.
Yeah.
Really is.
Okay, I'm going to move on, just because we've only got, like, half an hour, I'm, like, going to try and get through our questions. And you've kind of touched on some of them already, so I won't delve into them again. But my next question was around the notion of disability in Africa and the kind of gloomy picture that's often painted of whether people with disabilities are actually accepted there. And so I wonder, as people both of African descent, Tumu from Liberia and Jumoke from Nigeria, what have been your experiences going back home and did they actually challenge the assumptions that certain countries have of African countries?
I will say, so I was born in Nigeria and I left, like, right around my fifth year. So, but I haven't actually been back, but I went to... where is it now? I went to Accra recently. I went from the beginning of November to mid-January of this year. So I was there during the year of return. And it was very interesting because there are certain aspects, I feel, like that are true. Like the fact of certain... like a lot of spaces not being accessible in terms of the infrastructure. So the roads, they're not good for cars, they're not good for walking, or you have to have, like, one of those, like, really big, like, off-road cars in order to be able to access them. Many spaces, be they business, educational, religious, what have you, like, a lot of buildings aren't accessible. And what I experience, like, in terms of people and their reaction to me and my disability, was that there was a sort of curiosity there, like, okay, I wonder what happened with your leg. And, like, people, unfortunately, you do get used to people staring at you because people do stare. But I will say that I was coming from a place of privilege. So I was coming from the UK. I had my British passport and I was spending pounds, right? right? Like, I obviously converted it to the local money CDs, but I was not at all living the life of the average Ghanaian or the average person in Accra that had a disability, because there are certain spaces that I could access. Like, not once did I go anywhere that I wasn't in a car. Like, I was able to afford Ubers to take me from place to place. And one particular experience that myself and Kim had, when we were in an Uber, we were on our way to do an interview actually with one of the media stations in Ghana. And when you're driving by, you see quite a number of disabled people begging on the streets. And so often if there's like a traffic jam or whatever, they're able to come directly to the cars and, you know, like ask for money. And on this particular occasion, our Uber driver had like essentially shooed the person away and then turned around to myself and Kim, who's also disabled and she uses a wheelchair, and apologized to us for that person being a nuisance or disturbing us. And the only difference, the only real material difference, was the privilege that we had and they did not, because they are disabled African people. We are also disabled African people, but our privilege through the passport, through the money, meant that we were able to be in an Uber and just go carting around instead of having to be in the hot sweltering sun. So there's a case of where there will be a claim of friendliness, and Ghanaian people, like, who I met, they are very friendly, but like, so, oh yeah, you know, we're really nice to everyone. And disabled people, oh, we don't really have disabled people there. They are there, you're just not looking at them. You're making them invisible, because they are, I promise you, they are there. And it's just a case of, oh, if I ignore it, you know, because, I mean, that's the way disabled people are seen. Like, if I ignore it, then it won't exist, it won't matter, and I won't have to deal with you. So that was something that was very difficult to contend with, because, I have said this many times before, the only difference between me and the little girl in Nigeria that I was, because I didn't come from a moneyed family, is geographical lottery. You know, had I still been in Nigeria, like, being able to have a caliper and crutches and having the ferrules, like the little rubbers underneath, replaced constantly and consistently, like, that would have bankrupted my family. Like, polio is an expensive condition because it requires maintenance and it requires upkeep, you know. And even for those that are disabled but come from, let's say, wealthier families, on the continent, you still have to deal with, yes, you do have the money, but the society is still looking down at you because of this very real reminder of your disability. Yeah.
I think for me, like, I can only speak from a very, like, narrow experience. Like, I've not spent a lot of time in Liberia, which is where my paternal side of the family is from, but I, I guess there, I kind of, when you talk about the staring and stuff like that, I can relate to that. People look, but also, I also have experienced that in other countries where, so for example, I went to Ecuador and it's electric wheelchairs aren't common. So there's a lot of staring because they're like, whoa, you've got an electric wheelchair. You know, like, we're coming there, like you said, and we do, there are things about us that people are like, they're not familiar with, basically, in terms of like mobility aids and and also I guess as well, there's the kind of a lot of disabled people in, like, where you mentioned, or in, like, where my family are from in Liberia, they're living in abject, like, they're living in absolute poverty, and so see a disabled person that's not is kind of a different, it's a rarity, right? So I went to Liberia a few years ago with my dad, and we kind of just had to find a way around things. So like you were saying, we needed a car, luckily my dad had a car there that was his, but we then, it wouldn't fit my wheelchair, so we had to have a second car just for the wheelchair, but we couldn't, there was no like wheelchair adapted cars, so my dad would just like get guys together and be like, we need to lift the car into the boot of the, sorry, the wheelchair into the boot of the car. I mean, yeah, so, I mean, not just guys, my sister is strong as hell and was at the forefront of that movement. I will tell you, people were like, why is she so strong? It's weird. I was like, I haven't got it. So yeah, I think, but one thing that struck me, so two, actually there's two things I wanted to mention. One, when I arrived there, the first time that I went with my dad, which was a few years ago, we were sitting in the car driving and my dad had the radio on, and every like every hour I guess they were like, so it's the week of disabled people, the week of people with disabilities, and they were running this like national campaign. I think it was funded by the UN, I'm not sure, I think, and it was just basically raising awareness, discussing disability issues on the national radio. And I was like, wow, okay, this is like really this is like synchronicity, right? I land here, I get in a car, and all of a sudden it's the week of the disabled person, and I'm like, what the hell's going on? Yeah, just like people's willingness to like overcome barriers, like so obviously the infrastructure there, they don't have the resources and the money and stuff like that to kind of make a lot of those like structural changes that would make my life easier. But the way people adapted, like the hotel that we stayed in the first time, like they put little ramps down, like even in terms of just like, yeah, just people's willingness to lift my wheelchair in and out of the car, to like find a way around things so that I could participate. And that struck me even more. So sadly, my dad passed away, and we, as a family, decided to repatriate his body to Liberia, and that was last year. And my family live in a very rural part of Liberia, in a small village near the coast, near the border with Sierra Leone. And my grandparents' house is there, and it was built like 80 years ago, 100 years ago. It's really, really old. And it's got kind of big, huge steps to get up to the actual house, to the, there's like a veranda, and so it's not accessible, right? So the first time I go there, I couldn't go inside. But they built an outdoor structure for me to like chill in. But the second time, they said, well, you know, you're coming back, it's your dad's funeral. Obviously you need to be able to get in. And when I arrived, they just like put down a concrete ramp, like, and I was like, right, like, you know, like here, a 100-year-old building, they're talking about listed this, we can't change the structure of that, this is a, you know, it's a protected structure, blah, blah, blah. And there, it's like, they're like, right, so you need to get in the house, you're on your way, let's just bang down a concrete ramp and be done with it. And they just basically, they ramped my grandparents' house so that I could join the family inside. And I just thought, wow, that really wasn't a battle, and here everything's a fucking battle, like, you know, getting these changes made up. I think it's there's a lack of resources, but where there's a lack of resources, there's often a willingness. But again, I want to acknowledge the privileged side, because obviously I've got like way more money than people. I'm coming from abroad, like you said, I wasn't born there, I was born here, I've got a British passport, all of those things that obviously mean my experience is different. But yeah, it was a mixed experience. Partly obviously as well being with family, obviously my family are going to like want to help me and want to make things kind of good, so that was also contributing. But yeah, I can't really speak to a wide experience, but my small, yeah, my narrow experience of going there has been a mixed one.
Yeah, I will add to like what Tumu said is in terms of the lack of resources versus willingness, because I travel so much in the quote unquote
poorer countries, we know where they poor, where there isn't the infrastructure in place, the willingness of people to just like, oh, you need to be helped to access this particular place. Yeah, sure, we'll pick you up. You know, there's a willingness to actually just get down and dirty and just help. You know, whereas, as you'd rightly stated over here, it's like, oh, it's grade two listed. You got to fill out this paperwork and this thing and that thing. It's like, oh, no, but we can't. It's just kind of like, you know, obviously providing people with greater access. And, you know, your experience was with your family, who I'm sure love you and dote on you. But I've experienced that in loads of different countries around the world that have been on and off the continent. And it's a case of, can't seem to get through here this easily. It's like, let me do what I can to allow you to get in and out, at least for this one occasion. Like, what we now need is for the infrastructure to be in place, so even if they are not there, you can still access. But what is lacking in resources, like, it is absolutely abundant in willingness to just help.
And like, just to say, just to add to that, like, don't you feel like, you know, those moments where people, so for example, like you said, if you can't get in somewhere and they're like, what can I do? All of a sudden, they're focusing their attention on the environment. It becomes an environmental issue and not an issue with us. They're like, shit, there's a big step. What we're going to do, the step, you know, and they're kind of figuring it out in terms of the environment. And that's like the social model embodied, right? Focus your attention where the issue is, and the issue is that you've got some like big massive step in the front of this building, not that I can't get up there.
But
it's a mixed bag, and I think I'm cautious to speak to that experience. Like, I don't live there, you know, different countries are going to be different regions within different countries are different, like in Africa, and obviously I don't live there. I find it very difficult to speak to that experience. I think it's a very different one when you are, when you're there, living there.
Are there elements of your life related to your disability, such as medical issues, that you don't share with people? I'm assuming because you like don't want to have to navigate their fears or feelings around this. So I just wonder if you have to kind of withhold certain parts of yourself because you don't want to, I don't know, confirm any stereotypes that there might be about people with disabilities, or you don't want to talk about it. I wonder what your level of sharing is and your feelings around it.
Okay, I'll start us off. I feel like in terms of sharing, I feel like it's easier. I'm not saying that I would necessarily like do it with every disabled person that I meet, because I'm not going to tell random disabled people, it's like, oh, so this is what happened with my leg. But I think it's easier to share with people that already have quite a high level of understanding. And that's not to say that, you know, oh, you have the exact same disability, and even if you did, you'd have a different experience with that particular disability or condition or chronic illness. But I think sometimes it's just easier, and there's no need to do the preamble. It's like, okay, let me tell you the backstory. Oh, wait, no, you need to know this before you can understand that. It's like, oh, allow me to introduce Appendix A. Otherwise, it's like, you don't need to do all that extra work, really. And not that, you know, all my discussions with the disabled people in my life are purely disability related, but it is just, there's a shorthand that you have there that you don't have to go, you know, like round the blocks to just say, oh yeah, my leg hurts. I think in terms of sharing, for a lot of my life and experience with disability, I shared as little as I could. So back in the day, way back in the day, I don't know if you might have noticed this too, Mu, but and especially because we were at different parts of the secondary school, but in my mid-teenage years, I had to have a surgery on my right knee just to stop it growing, essentially. Otherwise, the difference between the length and size of my right leg and my left leg would only get bigger and bigger. So after I'd had that surgery, which was like nuts in and of itself, but we'll save that for another podcast, I wasn't able to walk for the best part of a year. So I was actually out of school for a long, long, long time. Like I could not walk. Like every single thing had to be done for me, and I was in the hospital for a while, and I didn't tell anyone, and I didn't want, because I know for some people it's like, oh, I'm in the hospital, everybody come and visit me, and that's, you know, and that's cool and that's wonderful, but for me, I was like, I had spent so much time, energy, brain space, this, that, whatever, trying to distance myself as much as I could from disability, and then you are not going to come and see me in a hospital drugged up with a fucking catheter up my pum? I don't think so. it's just, so for me, like, that's not something that I'm trying to share with you, and I wouldn't have shared that with, even if we had been speaking, I wouldn't have shared that with Tumu either, because, yeah, you know, like, she gets what it's like being disabled from essentially the beginning, the get-go, but I'd never want somebody to see me in that particular state, because, like, man out here already looks vulnerable. Like, I'm short, like, 5'2½", and it's like, walking's a little bit shaky, but, like, I wouldn't want one of somebody's memories of me to just be kind of like in the hospital, not cracking the same jokes, not being the same drummer that they had gotten to know. So a lot of those parts of myself, like, I definitely kept to myself. I'd made a post on my on my blog, actually, one of the very few, and I was talking about specifically speaking to my experience of the disability, and I have left hip dysplasia, so that basically means that my hips are out of whack, so they're like at an angle, sort of like straight dead on, and I included as the header image an x-ray that I'd had of my hip, where you can see like how it's tilted at an angle, and something like that was very important for me, because it was, in a way, like, yes, letting people in, but also, like, for me, releasing myself as well. Like, you need not necessarily hold on to this, like, oh, they need not know, like, I always walk at a fucking angle, like, now they can see the bones. So I'm getting better at it, but now what happens is that I don't even have any surgeries anymore. So, I mean, maybe we can walk near a hospital and we can take pics. But, like, yeah, it's a process.
It really is. So what is absolutely, like, just shocking to me. So I don't know if you know that I had surgery as well.
Oh, yeah. I didn't.
Yeah, wild, right? So
we should have been speaking. What the fuck?
Wait, what year did you have your surgery?
I think, because I remember I could get away with not doing homework. They tried to send me homework at home. I did.
Oh,
shit.
Yeah. They
but
love
that.
But
I think that was like year 9 going to year 10, like that kind of. So it wasn't like GCSE time where it's like, oh, shit, like I actually had to study. So Right about there.
So I had my surgery in July after we broke up in year 8. I had spinal surgery.
Okay.
A massive operation. And I was out as well. I was out for, I don't know, I don't think I went back to school until like the following like January, February times. I don't know, I was out for a while.
Yeah.
And again, yeah, I didn't really, I think I did mention it to people, like, obviously I knew I was going to be off, and I think I said, oh, I have an operation on my back, but I don't think.
And then you try to downplay it, I guess.
Yeah, they're like, oh, yeah, it's not really a thing. Babe, it was a thing. Like, you know, it's just, it's weird now hearing you speak about that, because I didn't really talk about it a lot, I don't think. I don't remember even that I remember nobody came to see me, but also I was in a hospital in the like the back end of nowhere, so obviously people and we were like what 13 years old, but yeah, it was kind of quite a lonely experience, I guess, in that way. And you're missing school, and you're aware you're missing school, and you're like, oh, everyone's gonna be like getting on with their
lives.
And
your friends are doing stuff without you.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, this is so shit. And then you go back, and it's a weird vibe, like, you know, trying to kind of get back used to being in school. And yeah, so I guess there are, and it's weird. Like, at the time, I wouldn't have said, like, oh, yeah, I'm trying to keep it private. But, like, now, I guess I do, like, yeah, there are things that I don't speak about, partly because, like, I find them fucking boring. Like, it's really interesting to non-disabled people, but actually it's kind of dry.
Yeah, like, when you lived, it was like, I laid on the couch and on my bed for a long time.
Yeah,
like, I'm going to tell you something, though. Daytime TV.
Oh. Wait. Yeah, because normally, if I was off sick, my mum would be like, no, you're not watching TV if you're sick. Like, you know, because she knew it was all, you know, the whole tummy ache vibes, like, I got a tummy ache.
A ruse.
Yeah, yeah. So, but when I was actually ill, or actually had surgery and stuff, it was, yeah, it's different. But I think now, like, there is still that thing inside me where there are certain things I don't speak about so much. I manage my medical condition quite privately, apart from maybe some people that I'm really close to, I might mention things or talk about things. But like, if I get sick, I shut the door and
that's
me in the house for like that period, and I'm gonna like get better on my own.
Yeah, like you'll see me after I've healed. I'm the same.
Yeah, and then I'm like joking about how I nearly died. Like, I'm like, lol, that was like a pretty deep situation. But like, I don't know. I think it's partly, it's like, okay, so what am I going to do? I'm going to tell you how ill I am and just confirm everything that you already think about disabled people. Or there's the part of me that's like, well, it's not your business. There's the part of me that finds it boring. There's obviously probably still the part of me that's like trying to distance myself from that reality that, you know, I do sometimes get sick. And yeah, the parts of my health condition that I find difficult or, you know, but I think I'm less like that now. Like you were saying, like, it's a process. The world teaches us that it's something to be ashamed of, or,
yeah,
you know, or that, like, they frame it in a way, and so then we kind of reject that. In a way, it's resistance, right? It's like,
yeah.
Well, I'm not going to accept that kind of stereotype that's been put on me. So I'm not gonna give you my private information. I'm not gonna give you the satisfaction of being able to like imagine me in a hospital bed, because like that's my business, and I'll tell who I choose to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's really complicated. I don't feel like I've got to the point yet where I fully understand that, and I'm trying to understand that more about myself. But no, I relate. There's a lot of medical things that I just it happens. It's got to carry on, and yeah, I just kind of put it out of my mind.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay, so the final question is, dun dun dun.
Dun dun.
Is there anything, you would like listeners to know about Black women and disabilities, or issues of disability justice? If there is a Roger that would have said the problematic thing in the club to you, what do you want him to know, or anyone to know, about Black women and disabilities, or things that they should do or bear in mind? It's a big question, sorry.
I will say, this is something that Tumu and I have spoken about quite recently, via the aid of voice notes, is reiterating to those, and especially because we are Black women, like speaking to our very global community, that our freedoms
like our collective liberation and justice and all of these things that we seek, they are intertwined. So if we cannot have true liberation, true justice, if, as has been happening for a very long time, disabled people are being left out. Disabled Black people need to be at every single table when we are discussing liberation, when we're discussing justice, when we're discussing what reparations for us looks like. So often we're not even really considered part of the community, you know, we're not considered part of our community. Like, we're so often disregarded as members of our own culture, be they Liberian, be they Nigerian. And yeah, there's no, you can't have one without the other. You cannot get liberation without me being liberated as well. Your freedom is intimately and intrinsically tied in with mine. So if you're trying to get free, you got to get these shackles on my feet so I can dance. Mary Mary.
Yeah, like, I think the thing about our liberation is intertwined, interconnected with other people's, is a really key message at the moment. I would say, yeah, just to ask that people put that same energy into educating themselves around disability justice, around like what's happening in their local context on a global scale. Like look at, like, you know, there's so much has happened recently in terms of like coronavirus. Like, some of the policy changes that have come in the UK are gonna directly like negatively impact disabled people's lives. And so it's about like looking into that stuff, like knowing what's going on for disabled people in your community. I think it's about, recognizing like the links between, like, for example, like how eugenic ideology underlines like white supremacy, but also how disabled people have been treated and are treated. Like, these issues are not separate issues. They're stemming from a similar kind of ideological system and that informs like the structures that we live in. And I think like as well for the disabled community to start to really move away from the single issue like politics as well. Like, it's not, we need to connect our struggles with others as well. So, for example, at the moment, the struggle of the trans rights movement, who are speaking about like the changes to toilet, I don't know what they're called, toilet rules or whatever. We have issues with toilets, the struggle to access toilets, accessible toilets, like good kind of facilities for disabled people has been an ongoing struggle. It is still a struggle, but we need to see that our struggles might be like look slightly different, but they're really connected. And so I think showing solidarity in that sense is really, really important at the moment. And yeah, like, I don't know, I find these questions very hard because there's so much that needs to happen, but it's about small steps, right? Thinking about like how accessible is the space that I'm inhabiting, how accessible are the things that I'm putting on, the events, the workshops, that, you know, what about when I invite my disabled friend out somewhere, have I checked access beforehand? What am I expecting them to do that labour? Like, stuff like that, but also not just focusing on physical impairment. Like, there are loads of disabled people who you wouldn't know they're disabled. Their disability might be linked to mental health distress. Their disability might be linked to cognitive difficulties. Their disability might be a sensory one, a visual impairment. Like, there's so many different ways that people are disabled. So kind of moving away from the stereotype as well that it's just a wheelchair or just crutches. You know, so those sorts of things I think are important.
And I'd like to add, Tumi mentioned everything that's going on with the pandemic. For a lot of people globally, around the world, in all communities, disability doesn't affect you until disability affects you specifically. So what COVID-19 with this particular pandemic has shown is that a number of people are going to get acquired disabilities. And a number of people have already noticed that they have become disabled because, I mean, thankfully they've been able to survive the virus, but now they're having to live and navigate life in a completely new way to them. So if it's a case of, I mean, we want you to fight for disability rights and disability justice because it is the good thing, but often people are not built that way. So then let's take it from a selfish, individualistic perspective. It could really and truly help, and in some cases potentially save your life, if the justice is already in place, if the accessibility is already there, because a lot of people, through environmental factors or sometimes just through old age, they acquire disabilities. It would be good for you to have these platforms already there in place. I mean, obviously, we have a very vested interest because we already are disabled women, but disabled Black women. But it's a case of, wouldn't you rather have already had the bed made than having to try and figure it out after the fact? And that's what I'll say.
Can I add one thing?
Go ahead, baby.
Sorry. I just want to add that, as well, I want people to be just as out. I want people to be outraged when they hear about the ways disabled people are treated in our society. And if you're not outraged, you need to look up why you're not outraged, right? So, for example, we know that during this pandemic, there are lots of learning disabled people who have had do not resuscitate orders placed on them without their kind of signature, without them asking for that. And if you're not outraged by that, then there's a problem with the way that we're thinking about disabled lives, because that should be something where alarm bells are ringing. There should be protests in the street. There should be people speaking about this eugenics that has been happening and is still happening. And if we're not outraged by the complete kind of I don't even know how to describe it, decimation of disabled life, then we really need to start asking ourselves questions about why. Why does that not shock you? Why does that not move you? Why does that not move you in a way that you feel compelled to take action?
You tell them, baby.
Yes, I will.
Yes.
That's it. Thank you. So much. That was really moving as well, just hearing about the ways that you weren't able to connect when you were younger, and actually you were experiencing very similar things, and now you've been able to reconnect, and what would that have looked like if you'd been able to at the time, but at least you found each other now. And I'm just really appreciative of you taking the time to share very intimate stuff with me.
Thank you for having us on.
You're so welcome. Yeah. You're so welcome.